different type of information or, you know, whatever he was there for, whatever his purpose was. And I know them cats tried to bust me, and they, you know, they was on me for a long time. I was up there, like, from the time I went back up until the time I got discharged, and I was, you know, I was doing pretty well, and I was taking care of my habit selling drugs, but they never caught me, you know. I was lucky. That's why I was just lucky. Because there's more squealing up there. They get cats to turn against each other. That's all they do. Like, they know this man is using drugs, and you know that man, they'll go up to him. First, they'll make you take a urinalysis. They'll just come to you any given morning and say, you, you know, go to the hospital, take a urinalysis. You don't have no choice in the matter. It's your body, but they're taking control of your body. You know, you ain't got no say. Go to the hospital, take a urinalysis. And once they find out definite that you are a drug user, they'll, you know, bring you in the office and, you know, privacy, and they get you, you know, off your deals, you know, squeal on jail blow, or set your man up, this, that, the other. You know, this is things that's going on now. This is what's happening now.
My name is Alexander Jackson. I'm 19. I went to the Army when I was 17. I wasn't doing too good on the streets. I dropped out of high school and so forth. So I decided to go into the Army, get an education, what have you. So I went down to take my physical, right? And I had tracks on my arm, so the officer there said, well, you can't come in, wait about 6 months, and we'll see about it. So after everybody left and went upstairs to get their medical records, copies of their medical records, I stayed back and I talked to him, this, that, and the other. So he scratched it all out, you know, and he said, okay, you could come in. So I went upstairs and got mine's copy too. So I went into basic training. I don't know. After a while, I saw the drugs wasn't doing me no good, you know, and I couldn't do my job right. So the CO talked to me, and he said, why don't you go on this amnesty program we got and tell us about the people in the company that's using drugs? So I wouldn't tell him about people in the company, but I copped to the fact that I was using drugs, so he sent me down to the amnesty program. I got there, I stayed there for 3 days. I laid up and they gave me Thorazine and, no, wasn't it, was it? Yeah, it was Thorazine and Valiums, and they didn't do me no good. They put all the drug addicts in one ward, and there only might be two of you in there, and you don't have nothing to relate to. You can't talk to nobody. The doctor doesn't talk to you. You just sit there, and you're still all messed up. Plus, you're still sick because the medication ain't doing you no good. So I stayed in there for about 3 days, and while I was there, I went in the cabinets and took all the hypodermic needles I could get. And they caught me with them, but they didn't press no charges. So I left there in 3 days and went back to my company for duty. I was supposed to be well then, be able to function, but really drugs wasn't my problem. You know, drugs was just something to block out the problem.
My name is James Caffey, and I spent 13 months in the Marine Corps. But before I went in, I was strung out, and I spent a month in the Rockefeller program, which, you know, I detoxed. And I also had a forgery charge pending sentence, which was a 5-year probation. And when I went down to enlist because I was gonna get drafted, I had told the recruiter that I had a charge case pending, and he knew that I had been arrested for drugs. But I was still accepted into the service. And when I got in, down to Parris Island, my drill instructor saw tracks on my arms, and they didn't say anything about it. And I went on through training, and I wasn't supposed to be out of New York State with a probation, but I was, you know, already in the service. And it wasn't until I got to California after I had spent a year in the service, I OD'd in the barracks, when my drug case came up again. And at this time that I OD'd, Naval Intelligence, who never took a urinalysis or a blood test on me, accused me and charged me with overdose and possession of drugs and possession of works, which was found nearby. But they didn't have any proof of it because there was nothing. I had no drugs on my person, just around me. So what I did, I went to the station psychiatrist and I told him what had happened. And through his help and efforts, I got out on a general discharge, which I was pending a general court-martial. And when I got out of the service, I still had my habit because I had started shooting dope again when I was in the service. And I came back to New York, and I was looking for somewhere to stop using drugs. So I'd heard about the VA hospital. And I called the VA hospital, and they told me to come down immediately and I would get into the hospital and be accepted into a detox program. And when I went there, they told me, well, I'm sorry, there's about a 6-month waiting list for detox or methadone maintenance. And I explained to them that someone had told me that I could come right in and get a bed right away, and they told me they only had 32 beds. So I waited, and when I finally got into the ward, I found that they were giving the same amount of methadone for everybody, no matter how big the habit was. And some people who have big habits need more methadone to detoxify from. And they were giving everyone on the ward 20 milligrams of methadone and cutting them down 5 at a time over a period of 7 days. And also, the sleeping medication that they were giving out, they were giving chlorhydrate to sleep with. And they would give it to us like 3 times a night. And what we were doing, we would just like take our medication at 8 o'clock and wait around until the next 2. We'd be literally laying out in the lounge nodding from the sleeping medication and just take it 2 more times. And the nurse didn't even care. She just came up and gave it to us. And some of the people there, like even myself, I'd go talk to the doctor, you know, a few days and tell him that the medication that you're giving me to sleep is not strong enough. And without examining me or finding out if I was allergic to anything, he would give me a stronger medication to make me sleep more. And like quite a few guys were doing this. And like after the 14-day period, whether you were completely detoxed or not, you had to leave the hospital because as far as they were concerned, you were detoxified from, you know, from shooting dope. And it really, it takes more than 14 days to detoxify a person, some more physically. And the aftercare that they have is you're supposed to report back every day for 1 hour to explain about the changes that you're going through and they can see if they can help you in any way. And up on the ward, we'd go up to the 17th floor every day and I'd meet the guys up there and we'd go out and cop and we'd shoot dope. You know, we'd get high every day. And the doctor who was in charge of it, Dr. Derman, who knew we were getting high, didn't say anything. He still kept us coming up there because the VA was trying to start a halfway house and he needed bodies to put in his house. So which is the reason why he kept the people coming up there, knowing that they were high. There was no groups, you know, like no trying to find out what you would do when you leave here or the problems of trying to help you to get a job or what was happening with your family or is the environment that you're living in now one of the causes of your shooting dope. They really didn't care about that. And a lot of the guys there were telling them, well, listen, I have problems. I need a job when I leave here because I don't want to go back to shooting dope because one of the reasons I was doing it is because I had too many things to do and I couldn't do them because I had no work, I had no place to live or nothing. And they would refer them over to Veterans Welfare. And when they got to Veterans Welfare, they put you through more changes, send you to get another physical after you just got out of the hospital from detoxifying. And then you had to come back the next day and they put you through more changes of trying to give you as less money as you could to get on Veterans Welfare. And they would try to avoid that by telling you to go out and get a job. And the majority of them, even myself, couldn't get a job as an ex-dope fiend and having a criminal record behind me. I couldn't get a job. And so I'd go back to the VA to their aftercare every hour and tell them the problems that I'm having trying to get a job because of, you know, my past. And they would tell me just keep trying, not doing anything about it. All they were concerned was just keep on trying, but just keep coming here every day. So I stopped going because I wasn't getting anything out of it, and all it was just an hour's waste of time for me to come down there every day. And besides, I could find someplace else to get high rather than coming all the way to Manhattan.
My name is Jose Estevez, and I'm from the drug menzone. I'm 23 years old. I started getting into drugs while I was in Vietnam. We got there October 23rd, 1967, with the American Division. I guess most of you people hear about it. American Division with New Brigade and everything. I got introduced to heroin 15 days after I was in country. It was rather easy to buy a vial, whatever they call it in Southeast Asia, of heroin for $3 than it's rather to buy a packet of American cigarettes, cools, marbles, whatever you might call it. I was discharged in August 26, 1968. And I came back from the army. I came back here, and 15 days later, I was admitted into the Kingsbridge Veteran Hospital for yellow jaundice. After that, I tested and all kinds of medical terminologies and things like that. I contacted hookworms, hepatitis, ulcers, three wounds, three purple hearts, which is like I became a sort of a different person.
WBAI New York.
Not because it was me, but because I was, first of all, addicted to heroin, and I did not notify these people about it, because I thought like I was gonna get left out from the society, or left out from the government papers, or left out from the yellow data, or whatever it is. I felt like I was gonna be left out. And like, I didn't tell these people to start with, but afterwards, after a week or so, I told these people that I was addicted to heroin, and the only thing they treated me for was for yellow jointed, hookworms, wounds, and ulcers. What does that mean by that? I didn't get the right treatment. I got the right treatment for my physical fitness. How about for my mental and the drug problem? I didn't get no treatment for that.
My name is Rafael Vieira, and I was with a medic with the Marine Corps, working out of Camp Tinshaw, Da Nang, 3rd MAF, Da Nang, and 17 Alpha out of Cantien. First of all, like a lot of, one of the questions which I think should come to our minds right away is like, why is it, you know, like that all these brothers go to Vietnam and get strung out, you know? Like, is it the fact that we just like to go over there and start shooting dope because it's nice, you know, because it gets us high? No, it's not that. Some of the major things, like for instance, I got off my plane in Da Nang with already the indoctrination which the Marine Corps gives to people once they're in the service. Get over to Da Nang, the first thing I know, there's reefer there as soon as I got off the plane, right? That's one. I understood that to be clear. I knew that there was a lot of smoke in Vietnam. But then you start checking out other things. I got to Camp Tinshaw. Automatically I knew. I still wasn't that much aware of what racism was, because coming from New York City and living in the ghetto area and never experiencing anything else, well, you're not too really conscious of what racism is. But when you feel it, when you know that you're under it, you're very much aware of it. Racism was there, very heavy. Camp Tinshaw, for instance, one example. All black third world brothers were always assigned to either the cafeteria, cooking, laundry, all of the menial jobs that you can think of, cleaning the barracks, all these bullshit jobs which are really depressing, which really cause brothers to have that little bit of extra time that they really have nothing to do with, but think about the changes which they're going through there. That's one of the reasons why people shoot dope. Next thing is the fact, okay, I got to Camp Tinshaw, and I was a medic there. There was a clear distinction between being black or third world and being white in Camp Tinshaw, except for the exception of a few what was called at that time blue-eyed soul brothers. Those were brothers, white brothers who came from New York, California, Chicago, the big cities, who ghetto areas, you know, who had that class unity between us, right? Because we all came from that poor thing, right? Next thing was, I was still in Camp Tinshaw, and I was a medic there. Automatically, medics were supposed to give better service to those officers, to those white GIs from down south, to all these other people who, you know, I felt I didn't have no obligation to them whatsoever. Also, in Camp Tinshaw, we would deal with immediate Vietnamese injuries from the immediate area. Those people who came in were treated worse than a dog at the ASPCA here in New York City. They were put not on the cot because they were dirty, the cot. They were put on the floor, and that's where we had to treat them at. And of course, the medicine which was administered to them would always be the old penicillin which we had left, all of the old shit. I refused to do this, right? So as a refusal to do this, I was checked out of Camp Tinshaw.
Now, after a while, I started noticing the conditions around me. I wasn't getting high too tough, but I started noticing things like sick children, little children wandering around the bush without any parents, just surviving from one day to another. I saw the high rate of prostitution. I saw the way houses were leveled down without any regard for these individuals, and I started becoming aware politically. Like I started seeing the war in a different light, but like all of this was too heavy for me. Like I wanted to do something about it, but I knew I couldn't do very much. So what I did was start getting high more and more on opium and reefer. You could get opium and reefer any place wherever there was a military installation or any place where there were GIs. There would always be narcotics around. And GIs were getting high left and right. Many of them were third world brothers. And they couldn't identify with what was happening over there in Vietnam. And a lot of them were frustrated because of this. And they also felt a sense of powerlessness, which left them with no alternative but to get high to escape, you know, what was going on over there.
My name is Frank Hunt. I'm 27 years old. I entered the Army in October 1963. I went to Thailand in October 1964. Upon entering the country, as entering my battalion, like the first thing I discovered was the morale of the soldiers there. Like the morale was very low, you know. Like I started, you know, rapping to different people and whatnot, you know. So like, and the decision that I came up with, you know, the reason why the morale was so low was because, you know, they felt like, you know, they were being used, you know, by the United States government and whatnot, you know, because actually, you know, they felt as though the people, you know, didn't even want them there, you know. They felt like they were out of place, you know. And, you know, after I spent a while there, you know, I felt the same way.
Finally, I was getting so freaked out.
Rene Hernandez.
I felt I needed some professional therapy or some counseling or something, and I kept stressing this point to my company commander, and like this dude wouldn't pay me any mind. Finally, one night in a dice game, I ended up in a shooting where I shot at three other GIs, and I was arrested. I was facing something like 45 years, three counts of attempted murder. Fortunately, I was found guilty of lesser charge, accidental discharge of a weapon due to negligence. I got just 3 months for that. I came home on Christmas in 1967. I signed the waiver. I realized that if I got discharged, I could be home. And I didn't, you know, I was tired of my participation in the Vietnam War. I was disgusted about it. I wanted to go home. I signed the waiver. When I got into Oakland Army Terminal, after processing out, I got into a cab, and it's funny, you know, like this cab driver, he had never seen me, didn't know me, but yet the first thing the guy asked me when I told him to take me to San Francisco was if I wanted a cop, you know. And I told him, yeah. And I went and got high. And I continued getting high even when I came back to New York. I went to the VA for some help, and they didn't have the facilities at that time. They didn't have anything with concern to rehabilitation and therapy and all of this, detoxification. And I had to deal with myself by myself. And I continued that cycle. Nothing ever changed but the scenery.
Fighting soldiers from the sky, fearless men who jump and die, men who mean just what they say, the brave men of the Green Beret, silver wings upon their chest.
You have been listening to excerpts from testimony recorded at the Winter Soldier Investigation into Veteran Drug Addiction. The Winter Soldier Investigation was held on August 2nd and 3rd at Baruch College. It was sponsored by the Vietnam Veterans Against the War. This program was produced by Miriam Rosen with the help of Tim Gillis. Technical production by Mickey Waldman. Sound recording by Jim Lindner.